Hello, and welcome to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that formed and transformed them. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and this week we'll be hearing from Austin R&B artist Mailot. But before I get started, I wanted to let you know that if you're coming to Austin for South by Southwest, you know, the huge interactive and film and music conference slash festival that takes over our fair city in early March. Well, if you're coming to town for South By, This Song is going to be there. We're going to do a live taping of the podcast as part of the conference's podcast stage. It'll be on Thursday, March 15th from 2 to 3 p.m. in the Wisteria Room at the fancy new Fairmont Hotel. I'll be talking to Minneapolis-based hip-hop artist and writer Dessa about life-changing music and her new record Chime, which actually comes out this Friday. You should check it out. It's dope. We've been playing her song Fire Drills here at KUTX, the radio station where we make this podcast. It's like this feminist jam that makes me rethink the way I'm raising my daughters in the best way. I can't wait to talk to her about music, and I hope you can join us. And now to Mailot. She's an Austin-based R&B artist who's been releasing music since 2014. She just put out her latest record, a collaboration with Jansport J called Move Me To The Present, which debuted at number 9 on the iTunes R&B charts. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Austin is not exactly known as an R&B town. Like, we have a lot of music, and we're kind of known for our genre stuff, like Americana and blues, and people also know us by our indie rock, but, like, R&B, not so much. But Mailot, she may change that. She's making music that isn't rooted in any past genre. It's modern, it's accessible, it has a cool experimental edge, and it's all anchored by her gorgeous voice. And here at KUTX, we're fans. So much so that we decided that Mailot should be our artist of the month for February. That means during this month, we're all about Mailot. We're playing her music a ton. She did a My KUTX guest DJ set and did a live performance in Studio 1A. If you head to the show notes page for this episode at kutx.org, you will find all of that Mailot goodness. I spoke to her recently, and she told me about not one, but two songs that shaped the music she makes now. Ella Fitzgerald's version of Misty and Mariah Carey's Always Be My Baby. Two very different songs, but as you'll hear, they had kind of a similar effect.
So I've always loved, like, jazz music. Like, Ella Fitzgerald, she was great. I heard her and I was like, this is awesome. Frank Sinatra, this is awesome. Nat King Cole, all of it. I was just like, there is just, like, that entire era of music. I think there's this classiness to it, but still a lot of fun and everything. But when I heard Misty by Ella Fitzgerald, I was like, the way she was able to put her emotions in that, it's just so, it was so emotional when I heard it for the first time. And I was like, and her notes are always just so, like, they're right, spot on, they're right where they need to be. And I don't know, it just hit me in my heartstrings.
Look at me, I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree, and I feel like I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand. I get misty just holding your hand.
Yeah, I just remember as soon as I heard it, I didn't know what it was, I didn't know who it was, so I took the few lyrics that I heard and I googled it. I was so excited that it was Ella Fitzgerald because I think she herself was such an amazing artist. I mean, to be a black female artist at that time was hard, to say the least, to give it just like, you know.
And she was a black female artist at like the top of the game.
Yeah.
Like the absolute,
yeah.
Like.
And I mean, there's this story that I think like shows how difficult it was for her and how much help she needed. So there was this club that opened up, and it was like where all the socialites, all the famous movie stars, everyone went there. And at that point, like Ella Fitzgerald had only been playing small little jazz clubs, and Marilyn Monroe was like, I want this woman to play your club. And they're like, no, we don't do that. We don't want black artists. We don't want black female artists, especially to come play here. We don't do that here. And she was like, if you do it, I'll sit at the front row and get a table every night she's there. And they were like, Marilyn Monroe at our club every single week to see this? Fine, fine. And, you know, the photographers were there, paparazzi was there, everyone was there. And so that was actually Ella's big, big break.
That is a great story because, yeah. I mean, not only does it show kind of what she was up against, which was like, not no, but hell no, like she can't even come in the door.
No.
But it also is a nice story about one woman empowering another woman.
I love it.
That's,
I love it.
It makes actually, me like Marilyn Monroe a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Ella even was like, you know, she was ahead of her time and she didn't even know it by even just making that gesture because, of course, you know, it was not easy for Black people to do anything at that time. And it was just a bold move on Marilyn's part as well.
Well, it was a bold move on Ella's part to go play a club like that because it would actually be like going into, like, they don't want me here. They want Marilyn Monroe here.
Exactly. True. So she really had to prove herself.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had to prove her worth, and she very well did.
Walk my way, and a thousand violins begin to play. Or it might be the sound of your hello. That music I hear, I get misty the moment you're near.
But it sounds like the thing about that song, before you knew, before you were an Ella nerd, before you knew who she was that you felt the song, like in a...
I thought it was really impressive how she conveyed the emotion through that song. I mean, she's just... I don't know. It just seems like she's just singing it, but it's just right. I don't even know how to explain it. That's I get so excited about this song. It's just, it's right on the money with the emotions and the intonations and the just everything about it is it conveys that emotion of I'm so in love. Like I that floating in the air feeling, but it's just, it's so pure, and it just gets right to it, and it cut right to me when I heard it.
Can't you see that you're leading me on? And it's just what I want you to do. Don't you notice?
Now, were you singing when you heard it at the time? Like, were you singing or performing?
I was in choir.
Uh-huh.
So, I guess I always loved singing. So, like, but I would never really take the center stage position. But, yeah, so I was singing in choirs and stuff. I think I was probably in high school when I heard it for the first time.
But you weren't kind of doing your own solo singing. You were like, I love singing.
It was a pipe
dream. Really love to be here with a lot of people.
Yeah, cover me up.
I'm going to blend very well.
Yeah.
Did you kind of understand, because I think in high school, like when you're in choir, that for me, I'd sang in a lot of choirs when I was in high school too. And that was when I first started to understand like what music really was how it was, you know, it's not about notes. It's about kind of like conveying an emotion, like from one person to another?
You know, the funny thing for me is, like, I felt like I learned the opposite in school. So I felt like I learned that it needs to be this way, and it felt like you had to... How do I explain this? I felt like you were connecting the dots of an emotion rather than letting the emotion flow. And I just kept feeling like, but I just don't feel like I'm saying what I want to say with these songs the way we're doing it. And as much as I loved choir, I had a hard time with it because I never felt like I was quite being able to say it how I wanted to say it. I don't know. That's funny that you mentioned that because, like, I felt it, but I didn't feel it it was like a reverse.
It was like you felt it in opposition to what you were learning in choir. Yeah. Like in choir, you were learning, like, there's a way to do it, and this is how you do it, which is a way that a lot of people approach music.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you play the notes and you sing them right, and that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not really, to me, what music is. It's, but it sounds like you were feeling something kind of like, I don't, that doesn't feel right to me. Do you think that hearing that song when you were in high school helped you kind of understand what you wanted music to do?
I think so. And I think that might, you know, I've never thought of it. Oh my God, revelations. I think that might be why I loved jazz music so much. It was close to what we were doing. There were standards, you know, everybody sung the same songs. But to hear Frank here sing a song this way, Ella sings Misty, and it's like, it just like penetrates through my heart. And, you know, I hear Nat King Cole, and I was listening to Michael Bublé and all this stuff. And you hear how they just twist and turn these songs into something different every single time to fit what they are trying to, like, to fit their version of that emotion, right? And I guess I just never quite felt like I could do that when I was in choir.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, because I listened to so much of it, it started making me be like, that's not what we're doing here.
To Misty and to
So there's Misty and there's Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes.
And then there's Mariah.
Mariah. Oh, man. Old school Mariah Carey. Every time Always Be My Baby comes on, I start singing along. If someone's talking to me, we're not going to have a conversation for about 3 minutes. It puts me in the best mood in the whole universe. But I would sing along with it every time it came on the radio. And I remember it was short enough to where I could stand in my parents' van. And I remember I would go up between the two, you know, the driver and the passenger seat. And I would just be singing and dancing to this song. And I loved it. I thought it was just the best song in the whole world. For a moment in time, and it seemed
everlasting that you would always be mine. So you were like a kid when you heard it.
I feel like I was a kid. Maybe I'm getting it mixed up with a different song, but I remember singing. Maybe I was like, you know, maybe I was crouching a little bit. I don't know. I told you I cannot remember where I first heard these songs, but I just remember being around my parents and singing that song. I do remember one time though, my god sister and I was singing that song to her, and she was like, oh, those aren't the words. I was like, yeah, it is. It's the words. And now I think back, I'm like, those weren't even words. It was like they were mumbo jumbo. Like, it wasn't it wasn't English words at all.
Do you remember what they were?
It's a big word that she uses in there.
Is it like, you'll always be a part of me, and I'll be with you indefinitely?
Indefinitely.
Yeah, but
and
it was.
I was not saying indefinitely. I was like, inevitably, or something. It was just like, not a word. You'll always be a part of me, and I'm part of you indefinitely. Boy, don't you know you can't escape me? Ooh, darling, because you'll always be my baby. She's like maybe 5 years older than me, and so she had heard the word indefinitely at that point, and she was like, no, it's indefinitely. And I was like, no, it's inevitably. And I was like, duh.
Listen to this song. She's saying it.
I remember she was like, okay, whatever. I'm done with you, child. And I won't beg you to stay. If you're determined to leave,
I will not stand in your way. You know, because there's a lot of songs in the world, yeah. right? So I'm wondering what about that song was the...
I think it was one of the... Maybe it was one of the first times where I heard somebody just do so much, like, vocal acrobatics. Like, she's all over the map. She's in her falsetto. She's in her full voice. She's, like, really high. She gets really low. And she's just all over the place. And I thought that was amazing. The harmonies were beautiful. And then she'd always do something different over this, like, I don't know her. I always think of, like, it's because I watched Ray, but, like, in that movie, how he would have, and they used to always do this, but how they'd have their background singers around one mic, like, you know, to the right of them, behind them, and there's, like, four people there, and they're just always singing, like, these whoop whoop little things behind them. And so I'd always imagine that in her songs, and but she'd always do something different over it, and I thought that was just exciting and really, really cool.
It's an interesting song because it's about being left,
isn't it?
You know, it's like it's about she's like, I know you have to go, but don't worry, I'm gonna sing this completely upbeat song about how you're gonna be back and you'll always be my baby. Like,
if you let them fly away,
fly, and they fly, come back
then, and whatever that quote,
you know,
thing
it's
is.
A whole thing.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it. I mean, when you kind of go, if you circle back to, you know, Ella and talking about emotion, it's like Mariah Carey does a really good job of conveying this kind of like,
I love you regardless.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, like, I know you're leaving, but it's that ideal type of love, right? Like, where no matter what happens, like, you truly love this person and you just want them to be happy. So if you're going to leave... Like, it makes me sad, but I'm going to be happy that you're happy, I guess. And I think a lot of the stuff that I write, I don't even really try to, but I do have an undertone of regardless of what's happening, everything will work out the way it's supposed to be, which is what I think. I really do believe that things will happen as they are meant to happen. You know, you can do your best to push them in a certain direction, but... If it's not the right time or if it's not the right thing, it just won't happen. And that's just, you know, that's life. That's kind of how I feel. And yeah, and, you know, I've never really been the one to speak up on my own, just like raise my hand and be like, yeah, this is what I think. So music really is my vehicle. So I guess these songs that, especially these two songs and these two women, what they did with their careers, I mean, old school Mariah Carey. We have to highlight that part. I think there was something very special about the music that they were making at that time, and it really helped me understand kind of who I wanted to be, you know, with or without music. I want to be able to convey things that connect with people.
Well, and I wonder, like, 'cause you talked about Ella Fitzgerald earlier and about how she was, you know, a Black woman at a time when, like, it was not socially advantageous in any way to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a woman of color, you're making music in this moment where, you know, some people seem to really want to be turning the clock back on a, you know,
yeah.
to the time that Ella Fitzgerald, you know, was singing. Mm-hmm. Like, people kind of are thinking about that time as a real ideal.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of quiet sentiments have become vocal over the past year, two, maybe three, especially. But I'm a firm believer in that there's more good in this world than bad. And so I think that the more that all of us speak up for those good things, for the positivity, for the unity and the love and all that, I think the less space it'll have. But I think it's sentiments that these people have had
for a long time. And now they're over time, you know, lately they've been feeling like it's okay for me to voice them. And I think it's better that they're voiced because you can't address a problem until you know that there's a problem. So if someone is being like, yeah, I have these thoughts that are going to send us back to 1930, we're like, okay, let's talk about it. At least now we know it's here, you know? We can do stuff about that. So, I mean, as terrible as it may be, I think it's good in the fact that we can do something about it.
Did that influence your writing for this new record at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's one song on there called Worries, where I'm basically just, like, venting, like, most of the song. And, you know, yeah, it addresses, you know, like... You know, there's a line in there that says, what if I have a son and what if he gets shot by a coward dressed like a cop? And, you know, it just addresses those types of things because they're real things. But I think the more we can talk about them, the more we can do about it. And I think, yeah, I just think it's really important. But, yeah, I try to... But the end of that song is that, you know... Music, love is my religion, and so when I worry, I pray, which is singing, you know? So it's like, yeah, this is how I feel. There's a lot of things that I worry about, but at the end of the day, I believe in love. Conquering all, as cliche as that may sound.
Love rules.
And this is Push from Maylott's new record, Move Me to the Present. And dude, I cannot get that Mariah Carey jam out of my head. I've been singing it constantly to my kids. Like, I think we're about to enter a serious Mariah phase in my house. And you know, that song always does make you feel good, as does Maylott's music. So I'm glad that's her thing, letting people know it's going to be all right. Because I don't know about you, I need a lot of that right now. And that's it. You've come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of 98.9 in Austin, Texas. This episode was produced by Art Levy and me, Elizabeth McQueen. This interview was edited by Dave Sanger, also known as my awesome husband. Kelly Seal is our excellent intern. Aaron Waltz is our social media intern. And thanks to Deidre Gott and Peter Babb and Todd Callahan for all they do for this podcast. And it's true. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hard Proof. Right on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.